Patrick, mettila in mezzo Patrick, palla nostra, Suso, tira Alessio, Suso, tira, perché non tiriamo? Ma perché non tiriamo? Gol! Alessio Romagnoli! Il gol del capitano ancora l'ultimo, come Gilardino!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher. I'm joined once again by Anthony Torgrud.
What's up guys, glad to be back. You can follow me on Twitter at Torgrud45. We also got Madison with us today.
Yeah, got a good win to recap, and you guys can go ahead and follow me at Madison_DT.
Yeah, and before we get started, as always, this show is brought to you by our friends over at Euro Fantasy League. So if you haven't already, make sure to check out our Serie A Fantasy League, which you can find out more details about on our Twitter page. So yeah, as Maddie mentioned there, we've got another win to recap. Arguably our most important win in recent months. You know, it's a place where we've struggled to get results in recent years. I think it's our first win there since 2014. We went to the Artemio Franchi on Saturday night and won 1-0 thanks to a Hakan Çalhanoğlu header in the first half. It was a game of two halves, I think it'd be fair to say, AJ. We were well on top in the first 45 minutes and probably could have scored more goals. And then in the second half, we were pretty much hanging on.
Yeah, the first half, we actually looked great. It was the Milan side that was on that 13-game unbeaten streak. That's at least how we appeared. We got the goal, went ahead, and then we shut off, as we've been doing lately. I don't know how we can address this problem, but that seems to be the issue here. The long-term story is that we go ahead, and then we try to defend a 1-0 lead, and it doesn't matter if we scored in the first minute or the 80th minute, we shut off right after. And then Fiorentina definitely outplayed us in the second half, but luckily they couldn't find the back of the net, and yeah, we pulled it through.
Yeah, I mean... This was one of those games where I think it'd be fair to say it was just important to get the result. We're at a point now where we're not going to be looking for champagne performances, because clearly the team, confidence-wise, is not at an optimum level. It's just about making sure that we win our remaining games between now and the end of the season by any means, and just hoping that sort of other things fall into place for us. But Maddie, should we be worried about how slow we were in that second half against a really poor team?
Yeah, I mean, we should be worried. I don't think it's anything that's going to be fixed in the next two games, because we've seen it the whole second half of the season where, you know, we'll have a good first half, and then, you know, with 10 minutes left, we let in a goal. And it's just been over and over again. And like AJ said, I don't know what the problem is. Maybe it's just the players are losing intensity, or they're just losing their motivation throughout game time. But you know, we have two teams who are coming up with Frosinone, who should be a win. I'm not as concerned about them as I am against Spal. I think that a poor second half will definitely hurt us against Spal.
Yeah, I mean, it is definitely worth mentioning. You know, obviously Montella's in charge, he used to manage us, but we came up against a really, really bad opponent.
Yeah.
On Saturday, Fiorentina have had a historically bad season by their standards. They're 14th in the table. They only have 40 points. They've now lost 5 in a row. They're actually only 5 points above the relegation zone. So it looks like with 2 games to go, they're going to escape relegation. Obviously, they're a team that relies massively on players like Chiesa, but I don't know about you, AJ, we've struggled quite a lot against Fiorentina in recent years. I was surprised at how bad they were and how bad they have been this season.
I disagree with that. I think we've struggled at their stadium in recent years, but overall, I think Fiorentina is one of the more overrated sides in the top flight. I just consistently think they're really bad. I mean, our last game of the season last year, we won 5-1. Yeah, we had a loss at the beginning of this year, but that was one of those weird early kickoff games where we just never win for whatever reason, so I saw that coming. But yeah, I don't think Fiorentina's that hot. They are one of the bigger sides in Italy, but they have struggled more often than not lately, and I don't know. I know in the podcast last week, I did predict we would lose, but that was just kind of pessimism. In my preview, I said that we were going to win 2-1, I think, so I actually flopped my entire prediction there. and then we end up winning 1-0, so whatever, I'm happy.
Yeah, I'm buzzing because I predicted Hakan's score in the last podcast, so I feel like...
I think I predicted Suso.
Yeah, you were close. I mean, he got an assist. Well, I mean, let's talk about the goal, because it's two players that have come under a lot of criticism in recent weeks for basically not producing, not providing service, you know, not providing much of a goal threat at all. But it was pretty cool to see Suso and Hakan link up like that. I mean, Fiorentina, I'm not sure off the top of my... Is it Baraghi who's their left back?
Yes.
I think, and he... Both he and Vitor Hugo, the left-sided centre-back, were kind of standing off a lot in that first half. And I think you could see Suso's eyes start to widen. And he realised that he could just cut inside and start launching crosses in. We came close a couple of times before that, but it was an inch-perfect cross for the goal. But
Did you see that stat that came out today? I don't know who the stat's from. It's watermarked with the Milan Bible, so I don't know where he got his stuff. I don't know if he counted himself, but he said Suso has more chances created this season than any Milan player in the last 10 seasons, and he showed it. And he's got 91. Second closest was Ibra in 2011 and 12. And then Çalhanoğlu's actually number 5 for this season as well, so I thought that was interesting. But yeah, so just kind of goes against the grain there of what everyone's been saying about Suso. I think that speaks less about him and more about the other players not being able to capitalize on those chances.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. I mean, a couple of stats that I actually tweeted off Milan Data earlier. One about Suso. He provided his 10th assist in the league this season, which is a record for him personally in a single league season. And prior to him, the last person to hit 10 assists in one season for Milan was Antonio Cassano in 2011-12.
Wow. I did see that.
That's crazy that we've not had a player who's hit 10 assists since then. You know what I mean? That's instantly highlights. Because obviously it's been pretty problematic for us since then. We haven't been competitive on an elite level, sort of, definitely since before that season. So, like, does that instantly point out a massive gap that's been existent for the last few years in that we don't have good creative players? And obviously we brought Kaká back for the 2013-14 season, and I'm surprised that he didn't get up to 10 in that season. But
yeah, he really wasn't that impressive in that season. I mean, he had a couple good goals.
He scored goals, yeah.
He definitely did what we needed him to do.
Yeah.
I wish he would have gave us another chance and gave us full season instead of going straight to the MLS, because I think he had another couple good years in the top flight in him, but oh well.
Uh-huh.
So when they say chances created, is that like assisting a shot on target, or is that like,
I think it's a combination of things, isn't it? It's shots on target, key passes, and assists. Okay.
Because we've been shitting on Suso and Çalhanoğlu all season. Well, Çalhanoğlu all season, Suso since like November-ish, and I feel like very few people actually like recognize what players do behind the scenes. Because based on this, Çalhanoğlu may not get goals and assists, but he's clearly creating stuff. And same with Suso. So the rest of the team is the problem. It's clearly not these two players. We've been relying on Suso so much in the past, like I guess really last season, because before that he was out on loan. And I think that we're just expecting him to do everything. But you can see here that he's actually like helping in the build-up play. I don't think very many people realize how important that is. It's not just the final product.
Yeah, I noticed that he seemed to be happy to drop a little bit deeper in this game and not just play exclusively on the break. which was good. I think a huge thing for Suso is he needs to improve. This sounds a bit generic and like it's not a thing, but I think he sometimes just needs to improve his footballing IQ. Like, he in that game, he realised that, you know, he was being given space to cross. So rather than constantly cut to the byline like he has been doing onto his weaker foot, he knew that he was being given 5 yards to sort of cut inside and whip in a ball. And he has to have faith in his ability that eventually he's going to get one of those right. You know, he's aiming for Piontek and obviously runners from midfield. In this instance, it was a well-timed run by Hakan and a really good header. But I think he just needs to read the game a little bit better sometimes. But it'll do wonders for his confidence. He should have had a goal as well, actually, when the ball fell to him in the box and he hit his shot straight at Lafont, who had a good first half. He kind of kept Fiorentina in the game in that first half because Hakan had that low shot that was tipped behind for a corner. And, you know, we could have been 3-0 up at half-time and then we could have been talking about a completely different mindset to what we are now. But we managed to get over the line. I mean, as I mentioned that I predicted Hakan to score in the last podcast. Another interesting stat is that Calhanoglu's been involved in 6 goals in 4 matches against Fiorentina in Serie A. So that's 3 goals and 3 assists. That's 4 more than he's been involved in against any other opponent. So he loves playing against Fiorentina.
And all of those, I think, came in that 5-1 win at the end of last season.
Yeah, he had a great game that game.
Yeah, I think he had 3 assists and a goal in there.
Didn't he score a great free kick?
He did, yeah, free kick.
That
and then
he
had
the last free kick 3 assists. Scored.
It was. And he didn't have many before that either. Which is so weird because that's why we bought him. You know, he was just this
same with
free kick virtuoso, and then didn't really produce when he came over here.
Same with Rodriguez, right? We bought him and Rodriguez because in Germany they were the 2 highest free kick takers. They come to Milan and haven't done shit.
Yeah, and same with
didn't
their
Rodriguez
crosses
have like
and Conte as well.
Double figures.
They did, yeah, double figures. I remember when we signed all them that summer. I was saying like, wow, between Suso, Conte, Calhanoglu, and Rodriguez, like, we need a striker who could use big and tall and could head it in, like Ibra, who we were linked with at the time. It was like, because we're going to be throwing in crosses all day. And we don't. We throw in a couple here and there.
Yeah, I mean, the thing, that left side kind of annoys me, to be fair. I can live with it for now. I was talking about players that have had a bit of a resurgence, though. Like, I'm starting to get worried about Piontek now. He's not scored a goal for over 500 minutes. He's not had a shot on target for 366 minutes. It's kind of, and I feel bad saying this because obviously he's been great on the whole since he arrived, but it's kind of like playing with 10 men at the moment.
Yeah, he's not really doing much to create chances. He's waiting for chances to be created for him. And that's the problem with, like, a poaching striker is that's how they are. And if you don't have players who are going to create those chances, which clearly we have 2 of those players because, as you saw in that stat, Calhanoglu and Suso, so clearly there's an issue up top, and I know AJ's been preaching it since the beginning. You really shouldn't buy a striker unless they've had multiple consistent good seasons. One season wonders or 6 months, you know, after 6 months, that's just a risky buy. But I hope he turns it around. If he doesn't get a goal against Frosinone or Spal, I'll be worried. If he doesn't score against Frosinone, I would start Cutrone against Spal or even start him this weekend because Piontek hasn't done much.
I won't argue that he's kind of struggled at late, but I don't like the fact that all he said is kind of like playing with 10 men. Obviously, that's not what's going on. I get where you're coming from with that, but we can't forget that in the game, not against Fiorentina, the previous one, who did we play? I can't think of who that was.
To Bologna.
Yeah, when we beat Bologna.
Yeah.
He kept us in that game. Remember, he had a goal line clearance at the end there and told everyone to wake up. So, I mean, he's still involved. He's definitely lacking in attack like he should not be doing right now. He needs to be getting more. But I wouldn't bench him. No, I think that's when the downfall began. You know, he had a couple bad games, not even bad games, just didn't find the back of the net, which you can't expect someone to score in every single game. And then he got benched, and Gattuso publicly criticized him, and he hasn't done well since. I think he's had one goal since then or two goals since then, and I just don't think you should bench him. I think we should just ride it out. You know, the next two games are games against easier level of competition. I think if he's going to get his goals, which I'm sure he's very hungry to get those last two goals for all the records that would break for him, I think these are good games to go out and do that.
Yeah, I was expecting him, even though I didn't predict it, I was kind of half expecting him to go out against Fiorentina and think, well, I've got to score against this lot. They're like the least, probably Chievo aside, the worst team form-wise. You know, they've been letting in goals for fun. If I can't score against this lot, then you know, I must be doing... I do take about what I said about playing with 10 men, though, because there were times in that second half when he was dropping in and almost playing like a false nine, receiving the ball with back to goal, and he, you know, he won a couple of free kicks, and there were a couple of instances where he sprayed the ball out wide, and that was good. You know, that's what you need. If he's not scoring goals, he needs to be doing a job as a centre forward in other areas, and he did kind of do that in the second half. So I do retract that, but it just feels like we know exactly, based on the sample size that we have now, we know exactly what kind of striker he is. He's a striker who is capable of producing a match-winning goal out of anywhere. He's deadly inside the box, but we haven't been getting the ball into dangerous areas inside the box often enough for him. So I think he's been a victim of circumstance in that respect. But now comes the decision. I agree with AJ. I don't think you drop him. I think you've got to back him, especially against the two opponents that we've got to come. But Cotrone, without a doubt, offers more when you're looking at, you know, the other side from just scoring goals. And obviously he's hungry and he'll want to prove a point. But who knows? I mean, both of these next two games now for us are must wins. So it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, a report comes out in the week saying that we're going to play with two up front, you know, to make sure that we get the early goal and we...
That's what I would like to see, but who do we bench, you know? Because we can't take out Suso. He's... Regardless of what we're saying.
You would play maybe play a 4-4-2.
Yeah, I just hate that.
Keep Suso on the right and play Bakayoko and Kessie in the middle.
And I think that on the left, or Castor, that doesn't work. Bakayoko and Kessie cannot play a double pivot. It has failed every single time we've done it. It has been god awful. It just doesn't work.
It's not going to be Belier either.
If we do a 4-4-2, it's got to be a midfield diamond with an attacking mid. But with Paqueta out, we'd put, I guess, Suso there and leave Hakan as the left midfielder out of the... And then Bakayoko, deep line, defensive, and Kessie.
Yeah, that could work.
I guess that could work, but could for work, whatever but reason, we don't...
Width is our strong point at the moment, so...
I agree. So, I don't know. I don't think a two-striker formation is necessary. Now, I think that's a quick way to ruin the good thing we got going on.
Yeah, and you know that if we do a two-striker formation and lose, Juve is going to beat Atalanta. And then it's going to be like, oh, well, we should have done our normal formation. And then it's going to be a big old thing. And, you know, just the way it happens.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's very rare, you know, and this is, the game's a week away. It's very rare that I've been so nervous about a game that's not involving, like,
us,
one of my teams. Yeah, that you, for once, I'm going to be praying for Juve to win. That game is just huge. It's huge. I think if Juve do win, and a lot of people are pointing at that Roma result, you know, because Roma beat them 2-0 last night. A lot of people are pointing at the Roma result and saying this is exactly why we can't rely on them to beat Atalanta. Juve were absolutely all over them in that first half, and they should have scored. But is it Morante, their keeper? Roma's keeper?
I don't know.
Absolutely. Absolutely heroic performance, and then they managed to nick a goal, did Roma, and then they scored one on the break later on. Obviously, Juve at home, we've got to pray that they're out for that Coppa Italia revenge, and, you know, they want to end at home on a good note because it's the Scudetto parade. Ronaldo's still obviously gunning for the Golden Boot. Capocannoniere, sorry. And... yeah, we just, you know, as Donnarumma said in his interview earlier today, we're just kind of hoping that they do their job. And then I think if they do beat Atalanta, it's ours to lose. We've got to win these next two games, and then
we have to.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I do kind of like the attitude of the squad. I think Gattuso, Romagnoli and Donnarumma have all come out in the last couple of days and said, look, what happens, happens, but we've got to make sure that we end the season with, you know, 12 points out of 12 if we beat Bologna, Fiorentina, then obviously Frosinone and Spal. And we can say, look, we know where we fucked up, but we gave it our best shot to end the season. And if it's not enough, then we know why it's not enough. But you just got to give yourself best chance. And if we sneak in above the dotted line, then it drastically changes the feeling surrounding the club going into the summer. So I don't know. What do you think, boys? Jack and Uville do it?
I think that we're going to win the final two games. That's a lie. I think we're going to win this weekend. I think that Spal's going to beat us on the final day. And I really hope that's not to knock us out of Champions League contention. But I only think that because Spal's been playing out of their mind the last, you know, 4 or 5 weeks. And they're going to want to finish the season strong. But I think the player's attitude, like, Romagnoli has really become a leader. I mean, he's captain, but more vocal, I guess, to the media. You can see Donnarumma playing with a bit more passion. And it kind of seems like Gattuso has kind of found his voice a little bit as a manager and kind of backing up his decisions and going at the team a little bit and holding them as responsible just as much as he needs to be held responsible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's amazing what a difference a couple of results can make. You know, I don't think that the ship has completely turned around, and the vast majority of our fan base would still like to see a more experienced, more elite level of coach appointed in the summer. But I think there's just a little bit of optimism that's returned, in the sense that if we do this, if we manage to recover from the hole that we were in and we somehow manage to get over the line, it's just massive. Feels like a huge weight lifted. I'm just looking, who do Atalanta have last game of the season?
Genoa. Sassuolo.
It's not straightforward. They should win that. They should win that because Sassuolo are a team that tend to be wide open, but they have also got 42 points.
But that game is also like, you never know which Sassuolo you're going to get, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I did notice that, and I do honestly think that Sassuolo can come out of that with a draw, and if, you know, even Juve and Atalanta draw, you know, then that would get us in the Champions League.
Yeah. It's interesting because, I mean, I know Inter won tonight. Tonight wasn't the game that I was sort of resting my hopes on for them, because obviously they have Napoli next, and I know you think they're going to win that, AJ.
Yeah.
But I can see Napoli taking points from them in that. Purely because they seem to hate any team from the north, and obviously they want to, as always, sign off in front of their home fans with a good performance. They're second and 10 points clear of Inter, so they're better side. They've won 4 out of 5. You know, they seem to have gone a little bit under the radar in terms of them being back in red hot form. And then they've got Empoli have Inter, who at the moment occupy the final relegation spot, but they're a point away from safety. So they're going to go into that game absolutely scrapping for their life. And, you know, in front of the home fans, if Inter go into that game still needing a win to mathematically secure their top four spot, you just never know what can happen. I remember Inter playing Empoli once in the last game of the season before, and I think it was 4-3. To Inter, but it was a wild game. So you just never know. You never know what can happen. Just got to focus on our own business, I guess. But yeah, we've had the appeal to postpone our game against Frosinone to Sunday rejected. That's not a big deal for me. I quite like the idea of playing first and putting the pressure back on Atalanta going into that Juve game. I think psychologically us being in fourth and them having to go to Juve and get something to go back above us is good for us.
I disagree with that. I think it's the opposite. I think
you think you'd rather see them lose and then us capitalize.
Yeah, I think I don't know. I guess it goes both ways. I think if they lose before us, then I think that's a lot of pressure on us. I think we mentally don't handle those things well.
That's my thinking.
But I don't think it works vice versa. Like I think if Atalanta sees us win, it's going to push them harder, not make them worry, because they're a goal-scoring side, and they've proven they could destroy Juve before. You know, they've crushed them 3-0. So I could see it both ways. But I also am worried about the Juventus aspect of it, of us going first. If they see, well, we won, then Juve could easily say, oh, well, let's lose or let's make it a draw and just say, sorry, Milan, because they know we're the only side that's ever going to do something about them winning the title consistently in the future. So I could see them just kind of rigging it that way.
I want to agree with you, but I argue this all the time. Professional athletes don't like to lose just in spite of another team. Like, they're professionals because, like, their mentality is completely different than the way that we look at it. They hate losing.
Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of on Oliver's side here. I think going atop of them first will benefit us, not only because we'll see that we're in fourth place, whether it be for 24 hours or the rest of the time. But I think that that will also help our players, because then it's like, all right, we earned this back. Now next week, let's not fuck this up. You know? But I think Juve are going to win. I think that they're going to want to close out their season. I think they're at home. This is their last home game.
Yeah, it's a Scudetto parade as well.
Yeah, so they're not going to want to start like this week of celebration, you could say, losing against Atalanta. And they have Ronaldo. Like, the dude is the most intense athlete, or the most intense, one of the most intense soccer players or football players out there right now, and he hates to lose. So I think that Juve are going to win.
It's a big test for Gasperini, this. You know, with all the rumours about him potentially taking over us, which I don't think is going to happen, but he's been linked with the Roma job as well. This is like a big audition for him. If he can go under high-pressure circumstances and get a result at Juve, which will probably get them over the line as a result, then, you know, that'd be massive for him. It completely changes.
That's another thing. If we're all in for Gasperini, wouldn't it benefit him to have us in Champions League?
This is like the De Vrij thing, you know, when he gave away that,
that very, very dubious own goal or whatever it was.
Yep.
The last game of the season.
He shouldn't have even played in that game.
They shouldn't. Like, I think that shouldn't even be allowed. Like, as far as that should be a rule. But
it was such a strange situation.
Yeah.
Signing a pre-contract with a team that's in the same league as you, it's almost something that just shouldn't be announced. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think that should be allowed.
Yeah, that was weird. Really weird situation. I'm just looking now. I mean, there's only so much we can say really about the Frosinone preview. They've lost they've lost four out of the last five, and that includes one draw away at Sassuolo. They concede a lot of goals, do Frosinone. They're not in a good place. They're relegated, obviously. They've got some names in their team. Sportiello in goal, who's obviously been around a bit. They've got Ciafani, Pinamonti, who's on loan from Inter, which kind of worries me. Ciano, the midfield's a bit all over the place.
This is at home for us, correct? This is our last game. So we're going to be wearing our new kits as well.
I don't know. We've not had... Yeah, normally we do. You're right. Yeah, normally the last home game of the season, we wear the new shirt. Yeah. But there hasn't been an announcement on that, and we're less than a week away, so...
I would expect that announcement any day now.
It makes me wonder. We've already seen the graphics that have been made by Puma for for the new kit. So you imagine it's just a matter of time before they launch it. They'll probably do it like on Wednesday or something.
Yeah.
Give people a bit of chance to get the pre-orders in and whatnot. But I'll definitely be buying that shirt if it's the thin stripe.
I just don't like it, man. I'm going to wait and see what the... I went silent there. My bad. I hit my mute button. But I'm going to wait and see what the third kit looks like instead. I'm just... I think the thin stripes looks nice with a collar. I don't like it with just a crew neck. And I don't, I don't know. Yeah, I know I'm the minority on that, though, so...
I love it.
Yeah, I like it, too. I don't know what's going to happen with the away kit, though, because that's the one that there hasn't been any, like, firm kind of... what's the word?
Leaks, or any...
Leaks, yeah, that's it. Yeah. There's not been a firm leak on that. There's been one which has been, like... all white with one black stripe on the sleeve and one red. That's okay, but I prefer symmetry in shirts.
Yeah.
I think the best away shirt we've had in recent times is the last Adidas one that we had.
Yes, I agree.
Just something simple. Something nice and simple. And, you know, third kit you don't need to mess about with either, really. Just an all black shirt.
Or gold. I wouldn't mind going back to that gold.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Black with black and gold together looks pretty good. But
I would get that kit for sure. I'd get both a home and away if we got the black and gold away kit.
I mean, I haven't thought this season's away kit because I just hate it. I think it looks like a training shirt.
Yeah. And the third kit is just horrible.
So yeah. I liked this season's third kit. I like it a lot. But I bought this season's away kit as more of a joke. I put, well, I don't know if I'd say a joke. I bought it to support the team, but also I wasn't going to wear it much, so I put one of the women players' names on it. I don't know. I feel like saying there's no way to say that without making it sound bad there, but I just figured that would be like a cool thing to do. You know, I'm sure they don't sell that many, and I don't know. I just thought that would be cool, and I wanted to just get the jersey anyways, even though I don't really care for it too much.
Quick mention, why have the women's team sat their manager?
I have no idea. I
thought they were
second.
Having a good season.
Yeah, there was that one point where it came down to the last game of the season to where it was Juve, Milan, and I want to say like Roma, who all could have finished first. And I think we got second out of the three. But yeah, I don't know. I think it said mutual, so I wonder if she was being lined up for something else.
Maybe.
Or maybe we're doing away with the women's team, you know? I mean, we have some financial restrictions going on. Maybe it doesn't. Because that was a Chinese purchase. It wasn't an Elliot purchase. So, I don't know. Maybe we just don't see the need for it going further. I don't know.
I think they'll keep them. I think they'll keep them on. We were like one of the first teams in Italy to officially kind of endorse a women's team. So, I think we're proud of that. And they've been pretty successful, to be fair. So, yeah, I hope we don't bin it off. I think they need their own Twitter account.
Yeah,
I'll be honest.
Because that's really confusing.
Purely because the Primavera do, so you might as well separate into different departments. Right. You know what I mean? But yeah, it's fair play to them. And I think that they should hire Gattuso as the next manager of the women's team.
So we could just start slapping girls. that's the last thing we need.
Sometimes maybe good, sometimes maybe shit. That would be fantastic, man.
Nora, if you're listening, I love you.
Yeah, just before we quickly move on to the old reader questions, I'll ask for a Frosinone prediction. Wait, are we playing them on Saturday night, or...?
Honestly, I haven't looked at the schedule. I just know that they're next.
Yeah, fixtures.
We're playing them on the 19th.
Sunday at 5.
Yeah, and then Juve Atalanta starts right when that game ends.
Good news.
That actually is pretty nice because that means they can't really. They might. They'll have a good idea, but they won't know much of the result, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I noticed as well that.
It's either win or loss. There's not much more to know about it.
Or draw.
It's a draw.
Right.
There's only two results in football, you win or you lose.
Or you draw.
Or you draw. Yeah, and I've just noticed that there's no time confirmed yet for our last game of the season.
Yeah.
They should sort that out.
Probably. Currently, my app shows it at 6 a.m., which is not the earliest kickoff we'd have, but definitely not.
I think they normally are at, like, 1 o'clock, aren't they? seem to remember when we ended the season against Fiorentina, it was like a Sunday lunchtime.
Yeah, the latest game for me is, I think, 11:30 this time of year. So.
Yeah, right, I'll start with you, AJ. Prediction for Frosinone at home?
I'm trying to see. So we drew 0-0 with them last time out. And then...
Oh, yeah, we would die of that game.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think.
Really bad.
So we didn't. They weren't in. This is their first season up, and right? Like they were here in 2016 or 15-16, left for 16-17, 17-18. Okay, that's what it was. I'm gonna assume we win. I don't know what the scoreline's gonna be, but I'm assuming we win. Probably 1-0. Just kind of edge it out. I feel like the rest of the season is just gonna be should show disaster classes, but we're gonna get the points.
Maddie?
I'm really feeling a 3-0 win.
Oh.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know. Ballsy prediction.
It's
let's
about
see.
Time you get a pair of those, huh?
You're... Anyway. I'm going to skip past that. I think Piontek is going to score. I think Crutrone is going to score to close it up when he comes down with like 10 to 15 minutes left. And I'm going to go with... Abate.
Did
it one as well.
I nearly swore heavily at you then. I really want to see it. I want to see it. Yeah, I'm just looking at our head-to-head. I've kind of forgotten what happened that first season that they were up. We won 4-2 away from home. I have a vague memory of us. I could be wrong here. Did we go like 3-0 up and they pulled it back?
I think so. And then we tied 0-0.
Yeah. Oh no, it says here we were 1-0 down. And then we scored 4 goals in the second half to win 4-2. And then we drew 3-3 at home that season, which is mental. We were 2-0 down in that at half time. And
Balotelli missed the penalty.
Never happens, does it? Crazy. We have this knack of sort of stuttering towards the end of the season, and then because it's the last home game of the season, out of nowhere we pull out this really confident performance. And with Frosinone already relegated, I can see them just sort of sitting back going damage limitation. I don't think it could be 3-0. I'm going to say 2-0. I'm going to say Suso scores. Oh shit, now I've said that he scores, he's definitely not going to score, is he? And I think Kessié scores a pen.
I like that. You know, I don't know if they're going to sit back, because if they're getting relegated and they can ruin our Champions League hopes, they're going to do it.
Yeah.
Because they have nothing to lose.
That's a good point. Yeah, I suppose it can work two ways, Kai. The players could already be on the beach, or... I mean, I'm sick of mentioning it like this, but how important it'll be for us to get an early goal. Just to kill the nerves and just to allow us to play at our own pace and not feel like we have to rush anything.
Right.
That would be mega, and that would kind of probably make them think, yeah, well, you know, season's over soon. So yeah, I'll stick with 2-0. Right, and we'll slide on to the reader questions. We've got a couple of questions. Let me just quickly get them up. Right, I'll fire the first one at you, AJ. This comes from Vicente Cervantes Jr.
Do you think he's Italian?
Should that? Don't know. Could be Spanish.
Okay, fair enough. I was just making a joke, but you're right. They could be Spanish.
Yeah. Basically asking for thoughts on the idea of Eusebio Di Francesco as our next head coach. The rumours have been pretty strong in this last week that he's kind of the leading candidate, which when we've been linked with Sarri, Conte, even Allegri, Pochettino, those are the kind of names you want to be linked with, because those are ones who can, you know, potentially elevate the club back to the elite level. Is Di Francesco that guy? Can he be mentioned in the same group?
I would rather put on my own pair of hipster glasses and then hammer nails through my eyes than have him be our head coach. I'm not a fan of the guy whatsoever. He hasn't really done anything. I mean, I know he had a good run with Roma, but then he was
I mean, yeah, to
trash.
be fair, he got Roma to a Champions League semi-final. He overturned a 4-1 first leg deficit against Barcelona
yeah,
in the quarterfinal.
Yeah, that's massive. 100%. Like, you can't deny that.
He was one goal away from getting them to the final. They pushed Liverpool all the way.
But he's not good. He had a couple good showings.
His first season was a lot better than his, you know, most recent season. I think it's fair to say. We've talked a lot, obviously, about the drop off that both of the capital sides have had this year and how that's allowed us to kind of be where we are.
I don't know. I just don't think he's worth it. I mean, he's known for the 4-3-3. We already use a 4-3-3. I think if we're gonna stick to that, we need to do like an attacking 4-3-3, not a defensive one like we do. I think that's one of the issues with this side is we build up defensively. We play out of the back. We have a defensive midfielder, and we sit back after we gain leads. And I think that's a big issue. I've always been a fan of attacking football, as was Berlusconi, as is Pochettino, who is the guy we should go for. Not going to happen, but would love to see that. I know he talked about leaving Tottenham and retiring if he won the Champions League final. So if that happens, maybe he would be open to a move. Just because he's never going to top that accomplishment there again. So who knows? You know, maybe it's not as far-fetched as it sounds, but I think we need a more attacking manager.
Maddie, thoughts on the idea of 4-3-3 madness?
Almost legitimately agree with everything that AJ just said. Before we got on, when we started to record, I was thinking about how Pochettino was talking about how, you know, he won't be able to do this again, and how he's going to actually think about his future at Tottenham now. And I thought maybe there's a chance he comes to Milan because he made it to the finals of the Champions League, which would be sweet for us because I think he's a great coach. He's really good at building a team because Tottenham doesn't really invest a lot, you know?
Zero spent the last two transfer windows.
Yeah, like that's amazing. And it makes sense that this team is playing so well together because they're not introducing more players. So from a chemistry and mentality standpoint, it makes sense. But then again, do we want a coach who, after he wins a trophy, he's going to go move on to a new challenge? Or do you want a coach who's going to win a trophy and stay to keep on winning trophies?
I think you look at sort of what Pochettino's done in his 4 years at Spurs. It's been revolutionary, really. He's kind of taken them from being the laughing stock of London and now, you know, he's 90 minutes away from ending his Baron Trophy run by winning the biggest competition of them all. And that would arguably, you know, jump Spurs above Arsenal because they've got the one that Arsenal don't have. So that'd be a fitting testament, and I think he would walk away if he won the Champions League final.
Yeah.
I think he would, because the best managers know, and he's not going to be considered one of the best ever at the moment, but, you know, the best managers know when it's time to call it a day at a particular club. You know, 4 years is a long time, and what he could turn around to Spurs and say is, you know, thank you for the 4 years, but I've completed my cycle here, you know.
Right.
Where do you go from winning the Champions League?
And I don't think it would be like a. I don't think it would be the same mentality if you were to come to a club like Milan. You know, we've won 7 Champions Leagues. Tottenham's never been in a final before, so there's a big difference from taking a team to that, building them up, developing them, winning it there, and then stepping back. If you were to do all of that with us, which is a big if, I don't think he would say, "All right, well, I've done everything here. Time to move on." I think it would be different in a club that's kind of had that historical importance, been up there. And no disrespect to Tottenham, they're a far superior team to us currently. But I think that there's a difference when you come to a club that has that longevity and the history of it. I think if you were to go to Real Madrid, Barcelona, he would not leave after one successful season. He would continue. And I mean, you look at what he's done for that team. The starting lineup they had against the City in the first leg with Harry Kane, total transfer cost coming in for those players was 150 million, and at the time of the second leg against City, that exact same lineup was valued just shy of 700 million. I mean, that's a huge valuation increase, for just the players. Ironically, the only player who didn't increase in value with that was Sissoko, who was the most expensive purchase of that whole squad.
Which is wild.
Yeah, he was like $33 million or $35 million, something like that. I mean, they don't invest much, and he's able to turn it around. As a team that has a lot of restrictions financially currently, even though we have the ability to invest, we don't have the, I guess, a legal ability to do it. And if he could build up our current squad, which we all admit are good players, they just haven't been able to do the thing, I think that would be massive. Imagine,
and it's a young car.
Exactly.
It's a young car.
It is
a
young
car. We've seen what he can do with a young car.
Yeah, and the players that he does get are very good youth players. I mean, a lot of the players came from Ajax that he currently has that are good. Eriksen, Vertonghen, Alderweireld, you know, Davidson, mm-hmm. Sanchez. There's a lot that he takes from these strong youth teams, and to give him one from scratch that is basically a strong youth team, it would be incredible. Not to mention the chance of him wanting to take, like, a human son or Eriksen or someone with him, you know.
Alderweireld, I'd take.
Oh, I would in a heartbeat.
Alongside Romagnoli next season.
In a heartbeat. Oh, my goodness.
That'd be great.
I would even take Vertonghen, honestly. I love me a tall center back, but...
Yep.
Yeah, so anyways, to get back to the question, no to EDF and yes to Pochettino, who was not mentioned.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I agree with that. Obviously, Pochettino has to be the top of the wish list at the moment. I don't think Gazidis is dumb either. He knows that if the door is even slightly open,
go for it.
To go and get Pochettino, you have to go all in. You have to go all in because this is the kind of manager that could end our cycle of being shit, basically.
Especially with the financial fair play. I mean, if we only have a limited amount we can invest mm-hmm. it in a coach who could do something with youth players like we already have. It makes perfect mm-hmm. sense. And Elliot knows that. They got to turn a profit, too.
Yeah, they got, you know, it's in their best interest to nurse their investment, so to speak. I think some of the reaction to DeFrancesco has been a bit harsh. I think he needs to be given credit for the jobs that he has done. Obviously, he spent 5 seasons with Sassuolo. He got them promotion. He got them promotion from Serie B the first time of asking. Then they were 17th in Serie A in their first season back. But then they went 12th. Then they went 6th. Obviously, they got into the Europa League, and that was when Berardi had his sort of breakout year. Then he went back to 12th. But then obviously he got the Roma job. And his first season at Roma last season, he won 23 of his 38 matches in charge. They finished third with 77 points. You know, at the moment we're on 62, so we're probably not going to get anywhere close to Roma's points total under him last season. And then this season he was in charge for 26 games and won 12 of them. And he was sacked while they were in 6th place. So...
And I do think most of the reason he got sacked was because of the exodus that happened over the summer. A lot of players left, and a lot of random, not big, risky investments were made as far as players went. So I don't blame mm-hmm. him for that. You know, I bet he could have stayed consistently top four at a good pace if he didn't lose like Nainggolan and all the other players that left, and or if they even
kind of had
in...
his hands tied.
Yeah,
a little
he did
in that respect. But yeah, Roma's recruitment last summer perhaps leaves a bit to be desired as well. And they spent big money on Patrick Kluivert, for example. Do I mean Patrick or Justin?
Justin.
Justin Kluivert, that's the one. yeah, they spent big money on him, and like it's not come off at all, really. But yeah, I think he just deserves a little bit more respect than what people are saying. They're talking about him like, you know, we're going back to Mihailovic or something. DeFrancesco is a guy that if it was this time last season, we would be clamouring to have him as our coach. I'm not even joking. Like, you know, the job he did last season was fantastic. But here we are now, you know. You could say he's out of work for a reason. And the other names that we've been linked with. I mean, the way I see it sort of happening is I can see Conte going to Inter now. I can see Pochettino, if he goes anywhere, it'll be to PSG, because he used to play for them. So, you know, there's a little bit of a link there already. And I think that they'll be desperate to basically give him a blank check and say, you know, do what you have to do to get us all the way in Europe. And then see what happens with the others. I think Bayern will probably change coach, but I don't know who they'll go for. There could potentially be a massive, massive merry-go-round this summer. I think Allegri will end up staying with Juve. I don't think they're at the point right now where they twist. I think they'll stick for another year and hope they can get another title under the belt before they have to sort of drastically change things. But no, it'd be interesting to see what happens. In order of preference, I would say Pochettino 1, Conte 2nd, Di Francesco 3rd, and I'm going to assume Sarri's not an option because he has actually given Chelsea a very good season if they win the Europa League.
If Pochettino goes to PSG, I would take their manager in a heartbeat.
Tuchel.
Yeah. He's so good with young players. And I believe he's a good coach. He did great at Borussia Dortmund. But also, we're skipping over Massimiliano Allegri, who is probably leaving Juve this summer. And a couple weeks ago, he said he will be back at Milan in a few years. So do we want... I mean, that's according to him. Do we want to invest in a long-term manager, or do we want to get someone like Tuchel, who will be here for 2 to 3 years, develop some talent, and then get Massimiliano Allegri, who will make that talent even better?
I don't think Allegri leaves. I don't think he leaves this summer. But I think he knows himself that he's coming to the end of his cycle at Juventus, and he's kind of lining up his next. Allegri strikes me as the kind of manager who will stay in Italy. I just can't picture him managing someone like Bayern. He's been linked with Bayern as well. I just can't see that. It doesn't fit right in my head.
He was also linked with United before, you know, like I think last summer he was linked with United, or this past January. And I just didn't see it. And like you said, I don't see him leaving Italy.
Yeah, I don't. And like you say, he's kind of touted already coming back to Milan. And I would take it. I'll take that in a heartbeat because he's a proven winner. And, you know, a lot of people will pin blame on him for what happened the season after we won the Scudetto. But nowhere was he to blame for that. It was a series of really bad off-field decisions that kind of meant his hands were tied.
And
I think he's a good manager, and you don't, you know, he's won up until this season however many domestic doubles in a row. He took them to a Champions League final, didn't quite get them over the line, but that was, you know, more because the club are bottlers, not him. Just wins trophies, doesn't he? And that's what we are in desperate need of at this point in time.
I don't think it matters who's the manager of Juve. They're going to win regardless. So I just wouldn't say it's because of him. I mean, obviously you can't say it has nothing to do with him, but I don't know. To say he's a proven winner, I would disagree. I mean, I just hated that question that Madison asked so much. I don't like either of the people mentioned. I don't think you should ever bring a coach back after he's been there before. You know, I just don't. It's I can't explain it. I just don't think... it's like some, you know, dating a girl. You break up once, you're going to break up again. There's no reason to do it twice, so why bring him back? I don't know. I think it's a silly proposal.
Right, but you're not going to stay with a coach for the rest of the team's life.
Am I?
When? No.
If you love each other enough, Maddie, you will, okay?
Have you got some kind of relationship issues that you want to get out while we're on air, AJ?
No, that was the only example I could think of. I just don't really like him, honestly. I'd just rather him go and not come.
I think he's funny, me. I think he's quite funny.
I think he is funny looking. I think he looks like Bonaventure. Maybe that's why I don't like him either, but...
Oh my God, he totally does. He looks like his dad or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, he actually does. Yeah, he does. He always, he pulls this really awkward smile that looks like he's kind of in pain.
Yeah,
It is great. It's fantastic. But his interviews are quite funny. I don't know, we'll see what he wants to do.
He looks like he'd be a super dry person, like no sense of humor.
I will say we haven't really had a proper coach since he's left, but Mihailović was probably the closest we've had, but he he proved to
the
be
next
mid-table.
Appointment is so key in that respect.
Right.
Yeah. We cannot
but
keep
also,
recycling these ex-club legend coaches.
No, because you ruin the taste in all the fans' mouths about them. Like, yeah, Gattuso was a fantastic player, but people aren't going to remember him from that now. They're going to remember him as a coach, at least the newer fans.
Possibly.
Like, you know, like,
possibly.
I don't know. I just think that it leaves a bad taste
you know,
in people's mouth. At least some fans.
We had a pretty bad season under Pipo, and I think people still look back on him very fondly. You know what I mean?
Yes and no.
It's
easy for us to say that, people who watched him play, you know, but I think Madison's onto something with, like, the newer generation, the fans that, for whatever reason, decided to show up in 2012-13, you know, and after, they're going to remember what they saw, and that's the coaching stint. And I agreed with Maddie. I even said that before we appointed Gattuso, I said, don't get rid of Montella for Gattuso, because I don't want to hate another legend or something like that. And it's not that I hate Inzaghi, I don't. I just think it left a poor taste in everyone's mouth as far as coaching. But I think that's going to happen a lot with Gattuso now. And even if we had a good run with him, you know, it's still going to end poorly here. Unless we get Champions League. So I don't know. I guess I don't know.
I don't know how you can have a bad taste with Pipo Inzaghi in your mouth.
Oof,
that came out real bad.
That was
a bad
awful.
Taste in
that
your mouth
was
about
really,
Pipo
really
Inzaghi.
Right. So
bad string of words.
We'll talk to you guys next week. I'm out.
Yeah.
Because, dude, I don't know, man. He's such a great player, and he, you know, I don't know. I met him when he was in Detroit. I asked him to sign a Milan shirt, and he laughed at me and he signed it. Like he just looked so happy that a Milan fan actually approached him and asked him to, because you know, like he's in the United States, but still, he was only in charge for a couple of months. Right?
He had a full season.
No,
so I
feel like he had a full season.
He was in charge for a full season.
And I think that's also part of my bitterness, is because Clarence Seedorf was robbed of a full season. He deserved it.
Mm-hmm.
And if,
yeah,
and
I
then
don't
same
think
with
so.
Mihaljevic. He got boned when he took us to our first final in forever and was sacked right before because he played a style that Berlusconi didn't like. And I thought that wasn't fair because he did significantly better than Inzaghi. So that's why I have a bad taste about Inzaghi, is the injustice to the others.
Yeah, well, that. Berlusconi's a crook, so he did things his own way.
I mean,
he didn't
yeah,
care
but
about
he was
anything
the
else
boss.
Besides what he wanted.
But yeah. This is another thing where, you know, you talk about managers and their legacies. Berlusconi tainted his legacy towards the end.
100%.
Because he held his hands up, he made some bad decisions business-wise and on the playing end of things. But for me, it doesn't change what he gave to the club. He catapulted Milan to be this global superpower, and we won 20 odd, however many trophies under his watch.
Right,
and that will never be forgotten.
When I talk to my friends who are Italian, who are not AC Milan fans, they talk about how much of a crook he is. I'm like, yeah, but he was a great owner of AC Milan, and that's really all I care about. You know, granted, I'm not Italian, but. Same kind of thing. He gave us good memories, so you don't really think about the bad when there's so much good.
He also saved Venice, like, as far as one good political thing he did. He saved Venice from sinking into the ocean, so that's cool.
Yeah, that's important.
Yeah. Yeah. Right, we'll quickly move on to the second and final question then. This comes from Christian Espinoza at Purple Buckets. It's an interesting one, this. Certainly not been asked this before. If Milan could sign one player from Man City, who would you sign?
From Man City? Ooh.
Yeah. I mean,
Leroy Sané.
I don't know. Let's go with two answers to this. One's a dream, and one is one that you think is genuinely attainable.
Oh, none. I don't think any of them are attainable. None worthwhile. I'm going to pull up their squad real quick. So as far as keepers, they got Claudio Bravo, pass. Ederson, pass. Really all their keepers I'm passing. Daniel Grimshaw, Muric. Defenders, Company. That's solid, but he's pass. Mangala, definitely pass. I like Kyle Walker. This is something that conveniently came up today, but I mentioned to you guys, I think we might want to look into a right back this summer. I just think with... Madison just texted me and told me to shut up. He doesn't like Kyle Walker. but let the
Oh no,
record show.
I was telling you to shut up about something else, not the team.
Oh. All right, well, with that said, Kyle Walker, I would take, as far as defenders, I think that's a good idea. And Leroy Sané's solid. And then, of course, Aguero is a beast.
He's
Oh,
old.
yeah, I have
What
rumors
about
that
Kevin
Sané
De
is
Bruyne?
like De Bruyne. Wow.
I just don't think we need. I mean, he's a great player, instant starter, but I don't think that's a position we need. I think we're going to take someone who, invest that
I
kind of
would
money
take
for a City player.
Leroy Sané
Yeah.
over anyone
I'll
else
take
on the team
Sané. I
right
mean,
now.
obviously, we need wingers, don't we?
And he doesn't play all that often, I feel like.
Well, yeah, he's not 100% unattainable like Aguero or Sterling or something like that.
Right. I think Leroy Sané, there's like a 90% chance that we can't get him and a 10% chance that we can.
Yeah. There were rumors that he will push for an exit because he's not a starter at the moment, but he's gonna get enough game time and he's gonna develop so well under Pep. Like you say, it's a definitely at least 90% chance that he's off the market, basically.
Right.
The answer to the question, the dream signing is Sterling, definitely. We're crying out for a left winger like him. Attainability wise, Gundogan.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, I like him. I like him, and he's pretty much come out and said he's going to run down his contract and then see where things are. I anticipate that he'll try a new challenge while he's still got some energy left in the tank. And why not us? We need midfield depth, and I think he'd slot in very nicely into a midfield three. He can play anywhere in a midfield three. Got a good set piece on him, and he's won titles everywhere he's been. So, yeah. That's my answer to that question. Right, well, that just about covers everything, I guess. Maddie, we've got a giveaway to announce. I'll let Maddie give a little bit of background on what we're giving away.
Yeah, so we are giving away a stadium print of the San Siro. It is done by Stephen Stewart, who is a full-time graphic designer. And basically, what he does is he does graphics of football stadiums all around the world. And I recently came into contact with him because he was trying to expand to soccer stadiums in the United States, and he did one of Keyworth Stadium, which is a fourth division team here in Detroit. It's a stadium of DCFC. So I contacted him and asked him if he would be so grateful to donate a stadium print to us. And AJ, you can tell him how they can win.
Well, first, I just want to go back because you said.
I'm sorry, Oliver, you can tell them how
Yeah, I was gonna say
to
like what?
win. I was like,
That's
why did he just laugh at me?
that wasn't the plan. What were you gonna say, AJ? You said first of all.
Yeah, I was just going to say, for the people that are listening, Maddie said DCFC. That's not DC United, the MLS club. This is Detroit City.
Or Derby
Different team.
County.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Good save there.
Yeah. But.
Yeah, so anyway, the way that you can win this, basically, you've got to be following us at Sempre Milan Com. You've got to be following the great man himself at Stadium Prince, because he's been so generous as to donate one for us to give away. And then you simply have to tweet hashtag SM giveaway. So hashtag SM giveaway, and that's it. You're entered into the giveaway. So, do that, get involved, get yourself a nice stadium print. We can send it anywhere in the world, so even though the guy's based in London, we could send it to America, Australia, wherever it needs to go, and we'll announce the winner in a week's time on the next podcast. So be sure to tune in for that to find out if you've won or not. So yeah, I think that's all about that. So good luck to everyone who enters. Any closing thoughts, lads, before I wrap this up?
Madison, you got anything you want to throw on us here that we're not prepared for?
Yeah, I quit.
That's good.
I
That's good.
actually we are prepared for that. We had something we want to tell you after anyways, so
Oh,
good timing.
great. Perfect. I love
Yeah, we're
it.
currently looking for a new co-host on the podcast, so Send your entries below. No, just before we end it here, I want to send a special thank you to our sponsors. Once again, Eurofantasy League. Check out their website, eurofantasyleague.com, to join in on all the fun. Once again, I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher or at Kilpin Chronicle for some more Milan-specific explicit rants. And I've been joined by Anthony.
Yeah, it's been a blast. It's a fun episode. A bit of a long one, so I hope you guys enjoy it. But you can find me on Twitter, as usual, at Torgrid45. Check me out there. Give me a follow. It'll be a lot of fun. The next guy you probably don't need to follow, but Madison, you can sign yourself off.
You do need to follow me because I don't have very many followers. Also, this podcast is about normal. It's not that long. you guys can go ahead and follow me on Twitter at Madison_DT.
Yes, thank you very much for joining me, lads, and we'll catch you in a week's time when we're in fourth place.
La rimette dentro, esce Radu, porta vuota. Gol! Gol! Abbiamo battuto il gatto nero! Li abbiamo battuti tutti, Alessio! Grande Alessio! È bella la vita! Lava quella zolla, Alessio! Lava la quella zolla, Alessio! Lava!